The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And so I was reflecting on what to speak about this evening, and I've been thinking a lot this week about the events over the weekend in Pittsburgh, about the person who spewing hatred against the Jewish community killed 11 people in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. And I had various thoughts or reflections around things to talk about related to that, and I kind of landed on exploring anger, hatred, and aversion. Famously, the Buddha, one of the famous quotes of the Buddha around hatred is, hatred never ceases through hatred. Through non-hatred alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. You know, hatred seems to be contagious a lot of the times. When we come into contact with somebody who has hatred, who's acting out of hatred, it tends to spawn it in us sometimes. And so this teaching around non-hatred is how hatred can end. You know, this is an encouragement for us to take care in our hearts around that kind of very, very natural, really, very natural, almost mirroring kind of quality of when somebody is experiencing or doing something, then often it will create something similar in us. And so not only is hatred contagious, but also love is contagious. And compassion is contagious, and generosity is contagious. And so can we explore the possibility of shifting our minds in that direction? There are different things to explore around this topic of hatred, anger, aversion. In thinking of a situation like this in particular, you know, there's the kind of, how do we deal with hatred externally? You know, how do we meet that? How do we navigate that? How can we respond externally? And then there's kind of, how do we respond to that quality when it arises in our own hearts and minds? So there's both sides of the equation, and I think that in reflecting on this, thinking about starting by exploring what does it mean for us to actually get familiar with and explore and open to this quality of aversion, even at subtle forms. I mean, maybe it's not full-blown hatred, but even in the subtler versions, you know, hatred, anger, are kind of essentially this quality of aversion, just this not liking kind of exploded or run amok. But it's very similar in its underlying mechanism. And so if we can begin to learn something about how aversion works in our own hearts and minds, not with aversion, not having aversion about having aversion, but more of a curiosity and an exploration. Can we explore our own attitudes of mind that are connected with aversion with an open heart? And so this is the place I'd like to start this evening, and I suspect this is what I'll be able to talk about tonight. And I was thinking in a couple of weeks, when I'm back after a couple of weeks, to talk about the other side of the equation. Because I do think that in order to work with the other side, in order to, how do we work with something as intense as somebody spewing that kind of hatred? How do we meet that? We need to learn the tools of how we meet it in our own hearts and minds first. And so to me, that's the place to begin. And so what is aversion and just this kind of subtle movement of, I don't like that, that mushrooms or escalates into hatred and anger? There's so many different flavors of this quality that are based in this kind of fundamental kind of not liking something. And I'd say it starts there. It starts, partly aversion starts with the sense that there's something unpleasant, maybe something unpleasant in our experience. We perceive it something unpleasant in out in the world, or something unpleasant that somebody is doing, or something unpleasant somebody is saying, or something unpleasant that we're experiencing physically. Unpleasantness, unpleasant experience is kind of where aversion kind of springboards off of. And we may not have the sense initially, at least I didn't really have the sense initially, of there being much of a difference between unpleasantness and not liking something. But they're two different things. Something can be unpleasant, and our mind can not be reactive to that. It can just be, oh, that's unpleasant. And so the beginning to see that there's a difference between something being unpleasant and a reaction to that unpleasant is where this exploration of aversion begins. That's the leaping off point of aversion. Something's unpleasant. Often in our experience, we don't actually clearly see what the unpleasant thing is. And we're already reacting to it. We already are wanting to push it away, get rid of it, fix it, change it, or flee from it. Kind of two basic flavors of aversion, I think, are what we might call the anger flavor, which is kind of the lashing out against something flavor, the wanting to get rid of something or annihilate something, just that kind of external pushing away of something. That's kind of the anger flavor of aversion. And then the other flavor of aversion we could call the fear flavor, which is essentially, rather than me kind of almost attacking or pushing outwards to get rid of something that's unpleasant, there's this sense of me wanting to flee something that's unpleasant. Just get me out of here, that kind of sense. So those are kind of two basic flavors of this aversive mind. And then there's a whole host of things in kind of in the middle, or different kinds of flavors of aversion. Some of the flavors, actually one of the first things in terms of beginning to be curious about aversion, or beginning to recognize aversion that's happening, is to know some of these flavors. So I'm just going to name a whole bunch of these flavors. It was helpful for me, actually, to have this list. I started out with the list when I first started this kind of exploration around aversion. I started with just the flavors that were familiar to me. And those included fear, anger, bitterness, resentment, hostility, dislike, rage, irritation, annoyance, worry, hatred, distrust, cruelty, discontent, frustration, dissatisfaction, and even loneliness. And then I went to the thesaurus, and I got a whole bunch more. Loathing, disapproval, disgust, fury, disrespect, disparagement, contempt, humiliation, unkindness, meanness, spitefulness, disdain, disquiet, anxiety, apprehension, dread, distress. So there's a whole range of this quality, from just the kind of irritation flavor all the way to full-blown rage. So as we, I think the first piece I want to just encourage is kind of a sense of value of recognizing this. Because so often, subtle attitudes of just, you know, maybe subtle attitude of irritation or not liking are kind of under the surface and not really seen. They're just kind of there, and if we're not seeing them, then they are informing how we relate to the world. They're driving our choices, our actions, our speech. When this aversion quality is not seen, it's really powerful in terms of its impact on how we act in the world. And so to see it, if we actually start to open to mindfulness and curiosity about seeing it, you know, it may be humbling to see it. I certainly found it very humbling to see just how much this aversive attitude was in my mind. And yet seeing it is way better than not seeing it, because it's there. It, you know, whatever's going on kind of below the level of our conscious awareness is there and informing our choices. And so if we can see what's there, see these subtle attitudes and views that create this aversive, these aversive states, we have then the possibility of choosing differently. It may not be that we can change our minds in that moment and just say, I'm feeling frustration. I guess, well, that's not useful. Let me stop feeling frustrated. Sometimes we can shift that kind of mind state, but other times it's not so possible because they're so deeply conditioned. Sometimes our responses to the world are so deeply conditioned that we, even in seeing them and seeing that they're painful and that they're not so useful, we may not be able to stop them. And yet a bit of trust that we can start to gain in our mindfulness practice is the value of seeing it, the value of recognizing that it's happening, rather than it being below the level of our conscious awareness, it's at least in our conscious awareness. We may be able to choose this middle way around this difficult state of mind, not repressing it, not pretending it's not there, not having it dive below the surface again, but also maybe not expressing it, so that the middle way between repression and expression sometimes is just meeting it, holding it, recognizing it. Oh, this is in here. For me, this was pretty powerful early in my practice. I might have mentioned this last week in another context, but Seeing this anger, in this case anger at a particular person, a couple of powerful realizations as it became apparent to me that this anger was a part of my mind and a very frequent visitor. One was that anger was painful to me. And it's kind of like, well, duh, but I hadn't really felt that. I had more been focused on the person I was angry with and, you know, aiming my you know, vindictiveness and, you know, anger outwards. So I wasn't really feeling. I was thinking more about the person I was angry with than I was feeling the experience. And so I was missing that it was painful internally. And when I began being curious about the anger itself, that was actually pretty clear pretty quickly that it was painful here. So that was one thing that was really powerful to learn. And another that was powerful to learn was to see that vindictiveness or that focus on the other person, in seeing this anger and what it was doing in my mind, it was part of what it was doing was telling me that I would be happy when the other person was miserable. I would be happy if the other person felt somehow like, you know, really bad. And so, in a way, I could see that the mind wanted the other person to suffer. That was very humbling. But in that moment of seeing that, it was just like the mind just kind of realized or almost extrapolated that if this being, you know, if this mind has that, just even just the little seed of wanting somebody else to suffer, I could begin to understand where war came from. It was quite humbling to see that the seeds of war were in here, and it led to almost more of a sense of recognition that when people do things like what this person did over the weekend, this person who killed the 11 people in the synagogue, it helped me to see that there were conditions that led there, that person's life, probably, maybe even from his birth, was a really painful life. And so that kind of understanding of seeing internally what goes on around aversion, this is a little piece of that external, helped me to see, you know, just that what's going on in here, what I can learn about anger and aversion in here, this is conditioned. What arises in here, the patterns, the habits around aversion arising in my system are conditioned, and that became pretty clear through looking at it. And then being able to understand that as other people engage out of that out of that anger, out of that hatred, for them, that is also conditioned. And the conditions that lead to extreme hatred like that must be very painful. And so it can help us to hold a little bit with almost like without closing our hearts to somebody. That's one of the dangers of hatred, I think, is that we close our hearts to each other. And so we might be able to open our hearts a little bit and recognize, yes, this person needs to be taken out of society. And yet we don't have to hate that person in return. Maybe we can have our heart remain open to understanding that those actions were born out of many, many, many conditions. And so this recognizing or seeing aversion internally can help us in this meeting it externally. Another piece, one piece I think that is really helpful around recognizing aversion, recognizing it in the small, recognizing it in the large. In my own experience, it can be helpful to maybe notice some of the subtler forms of aversion. you know, the irritations, the impatience, and things like that. At one point, I was just noticing, you know, just a subtle kind of, just a little tiny reactivity when I would try to open a drawer and it stuck a little bit. Just a little flash of irritation. It's like, that's worth seeing. Because that's like, you know, that's just the smallest little flavor of it. We might just brush it aside. Oh, that's not so important. But it's that little flavor is where the bigger ones arise from. So it can sometimes be useful to kind of attune ourselves to the flavors of aversion in our minds in the small. And, you know, when they're happening in the large, for me, I just committed myself to, well, whenever I'm really angry, I want to know. I want to be aware of that. I want to be mindful of that. So having some of these flavors of aversion, names of aversion, that was helpful to me so that I could begin to kind of this is the irritation flavor. This is the frustration flavor. This is the impatience flavor, or this is the real anger flavor. This is the anxiety flavor. So just getting familiar with all of these different flavors. Just the recognition of it. Just knowing, oh, this flavor of aversion is arising. Just that is powerful. Just that. There's a lot more that I'm going to say about how we can explore and be present with our aversive experience, our aversive states of mind. But just knowing and being aware, oh, this is anger. This is irritation. Just that is powerful. In one stretch of time, I was just doing that around one particular anger that I had. And at this point, and this is another way that we sometimes have to work with anger or irritation or hatred, more the bigger flavors, rage, hatred, anger when it's strong. Sometimes we might find that if we try to open to it with mindfulness, oh yes, this is hatred. It's like, our minds just get sucked into it because it's like the quality of the hatred or the quality of the rage is stronger than our ability to be mindful in that moment. And so sometimes we have to kind of set it aside in a very gentle way. I learned a very gentle, kind way of acknowledging it. It's like I would often be walking when I noticed that my mind was kind of looping into this anger story. And when I noticed it, when it became obvious to me, I would kind of acknowledge, yep, I see you, anger. And I've seen kind of repeatedly in the last little while that trying to pay attention, being mindful of anger is not so helpful because I just get stuck to it again. So I'm going to take a walk and put my attention in my feet, but, you know, you can take a walk with me. That's what I said to my anger. I would just like, it's just like redirecting. And that entire kind of conversation that I initially had with my anger got collapsed into just a simple, I see you, and not now, and redirecting the attention. But that practice that I did, and I did that for quite a while, I don't even remember how long, maybe as long as a year or more, around this particular anger that was so sticky for me, I would just notice, oh, yep, there's the anger. And so that was the recognition piece with the mindfulness. Yep, I recognize you, anger. And then I would redirect the attention. And that itself, that had a power to it that over the course of many, many months, I actually began to kind of recognize that the frequency with which that anger was coming up was getting less. And so it was kind of weakening in some way. Even though I hadn't actually looked at it yet, I mean, I actually thought I was going to have to, like, at some point take that anger out and really like look at it under the microscope with mindfulness and figure out all the pieces and the components and how it affected the body and all of that. I thought I was going to have to do that with this anger. It was so strong. But over the course of many months, just that very simple, I see you and not now, it just kind of weakened the pattern. And then one day, I had a thought while I was walking. I had a thought about this person that I had been angry with. And I realized in that moment that I wasn't angry. And in fact, that I had not been angry at that person in I didn't know how long. And in that moment, I kind of checked and I could find no trace of that anger. It had vanished while I wasn't looking at it. And so this, just a simple recognition, oh, this is anger. Even if all we do is, and even if all we can do is say, yep, I see you, and yeah, wow, I'm going to put my attention someplace else. And I just put my attention in something neutral. You know, my feet on the ground. I just let my attention go to something really, what felt safe and grounding and helped me to stay connected in the moment. I don't usually recommend something like, oh, anger, I see you. Let me turn on the TV and watch, you know, space out kind of, or you know, just like let my mind go elsewhere, because you need, I think what happens if you try to just like, you know, check out is that the habit of anger will come into that mind that's checked out. It has less way to kind of infiltrate if we're being connected to some other experience. Like just something simple, like feet on the ground. You know, just something simple. So that's one tool, is just a simple recognition. And then we can also, as the mindfulness strengthens, we can also start investigating a little bit more. Another thing that's useful is that can help us to recognize when these aversive states are happening is to get familiar with kind of what the thoughts are that go with certain states of mind. And there'll be slightly different flavors for everybody, I think, but maybe there's some kind of familiar kind of thoughts. So the basic aversion, the thoughts that go with that are things like, not this, I don't like this, how can I get rid of this? That kind of thought. Fear has a kind of quality of what if this bad thing happens. So it's got a kind of a projection into the future. We've got some idea coming up in our mind and we're envisioning that it might happen. Fear is often about some kind of what-ifing. And so the what-if thought can often be a kind of a clue that there's a flavor of fear or anxiety happening. Anger often has a kind of a flavor of, you done me wrong, that kind of a thing. They shouldn't have done that, something like that. Might have a sense of excessively replaying. For me, a lot of the quality of mind that was connected to anger was like this excessive replay of the past. I would just loop back over and over again on a particular story. That, for me, was the loop around anger. I can imagine for other people it might be a loop around something else. It's like the anger flavor was very strong in my own conditioning. And so that tended to be where my mind would loop to. If you have a fear flavor, you might loop to something like that. So, you know, just There could be different flavors of that excessive replay of the past. And so getting familiar with the stories or the narrative that go along with various of these qualities of of aversion. In terms of having a little bit more kind of curiosity about the aversion with bringing mindfulness to it, we can recognize that there's different aspects of aversion happening in our experience. There's going to be the thoughts is one part of the experience, often. Sometimes emotions come without a story, but often there's a story connected to them. And so there's the thought piece of it. Then there is kind of how the mind is. And likewise with each of these flavors, there's a story with them. There's also kind of a flavor in the mind. Maybe it's just a real basic flavor. With the anger flavor, it's kind of more of a lash out kind of mental energy. With the fear flavor, it's kind of more of a withdrawal kind of mental energy. Just a sense of the mind kind of either wanting to go towards something to get rid of it or to pull away from it. So there's this kind of flavor in the mind that doesn't necessarily have thoughts connected with it. This is a subtle kind of piece in the mind, this flavor of the flavor in the mind around the emotion. But sometimes we do, in some ways, know this. Because sometimes we know, like for instance, we know that we're irritated or we know that we're frustrated, but we don't exactly know how we know that. And I think partly what's happening is that we know that we know at some level, we're familiar at some level with this is the way the system feels when frustration's happening, but we haven't really seen it enough to be able to articulate it. But we know that we're experiencing that. And so we don't actually have to try to figure out that quality of the mind. We can just know, yep, okay, this is irritation, and just kind of take that in. This is what it's like to be irritated. And then the third aspect of any strong emotion has these qualities. It's got the thought component, the mind state aspect, and then there's also how it affects the body. And this is probably the easiest place to connect with when there is any kind of reactive emotion, but in this case we're exploring aversion. So exploring aversion in the body. One of the keys to this exploration, as I pointed to earlier, how when we are in a state of anger or hatred or rage or aversion or irritation or whatever flavor of aversion it is, we are often focused on the thing that we are averse to. The thing or the situation or what somebody said or our belief about what somebody's thinking about us, whatever it is, we're focused on that. It can be useful to actually recognize what actually am I reacting to. That's really useful, actually, because sometimes it's like it's something we're not even that's not even so conscious for us. So you know, we might think that we're angry at somebody because of something they're doing. But the reactivity actually may be more related to the fact that they have a particular body type. And somebody that I've been really close to who had that body type did a lot of things that made me angry. And so it's almost like there's this transference based on some simple quality or characteristic of the situation or something. And then we're reacting to that. And so sometimes it can be useful to explore or to be curious about what actually am I reacting to here? What am I reacting to? Is it what I think I'm reacting to? But in any case, in the exploration of the anger itself, it's useful to kind of take the attention out of the thing that we're reacting to and bring the attention into the experience of the anger or the frustration, the aversion itself. This is not our normal response to reactivity. Our normal response to reactivity is to try to do something to fix the situation so that this reactivity will go away. And we think that's the only way that this reactivity will go away, is to fix the situation, to get myself out of the situation. And so that's our habit. That's what we've habitually engaged in. And so this kind of sense of hovering with the experience of the aversion itself is not our usual way. But if we can take our attention out of the situation or the thing or the event that is kind of that we think the anger is happening around, and turn towards the experience, what is it like to be a human being that's experiencing this quality of mind? What's it like to feel this internally? That takes a lot of courage. It's uncomfortable. And as I said, you know, one of the first things I learned was how painful it was. But this is actually helpful, to learn how uncomfortable and how painful it is to experience this quality of mind, because when we don't know that, when we don't know that it actually hurts us to be angry, to have aversion, then we keep acting in ways that will just continue to inflame that quality in the mind. In the suttas, the typical response to anger is described as being like picking up a hot coal in order to throw it at somebody. You yourself are burned first. And that is very much the quality. And seeing, as we see in our experience of turning towards the quality of what does it feel like to be experiencing aversion, we feel the pain of that. And because we haven't seen that so much in the past, because we haven't seen that anger, aversion, hurts here first, that we've picked up that hot coal. You know, when we see that we've picked up a hot coal and feel the pain of that, what our system will do is to let go of that hot coal. And so this is a very natural movement of the mind as it gets this information that it hurts to be angry. It begins to transform. It begins to find a way to release it and let it go. And one of the ways into being able to be with our difficult states of mind, aversion states of mind, is to touch into the physical experience. How does this aversion affect the body? When it's a subtle flavor, like irritation, it may be a very subtle impact on the body. If it's impatience, it might just be a little kind of contraction. Or as it gets stronger, anger tends to have, the stronger flavors of aversion tend to have a very strong effect on the body. And so it's not so hard to begin to touch into that. When anger arises, it often can feel like pressure and heat rising in the body. When fear arises, often there's contraction, a sense of bracing, maybe a sense of energy in a kind of a fluttering or a kind of chaotic experience in the abdomen. So there's some very strong physical experiences. Turning towards the physical experiences is helpful for a couple reasons. One, it keeps us in the present moment. It keeps us with the experience. These physical sensations themselves are not the anger itself or not the aversion itself. The aversion is a mental thing, but it is what we could say, it's how the aversion affects the body. And so it's very closely related to the aversion, and it can help us to stay in the terrain of being with the aversion without kind of feeding the fuel, feeding the fire, as we think about the person or the situation that we're angry with. Those thoughts themselves, the thoughts about they shouldn't have done that, they did that thing, and that's how it affected me, and here's how I need to make sure they don't do that again. All of those thoughts tend to reinforce the quality of the aversion. And so if we can take our attention out of the thoughts, take our attention away from the thing we're angry with and in favor of being with the experience of anger itself, then often what we see happen is because we have taken the energy out of the thing that's kind of triggering the anger and the thoughts like about that situation are almost like we've got our foot on the gas pedal. We are fueling the fire by thinking thoughts about the situation. So we are increasing or encouraging the anger when we're thinking the thought. So if we can take our foot off the gas pedal, not think those thoughts, and put the attention in the body, it's almost like what we do if we continue with the analogy of the putting the foot on the gas pedal. It's like when we're in anger or in an aversive state, maybe it's like we're on the freeway and we're speeding down the freeway. We got our foot on the gas pedal. When we turn instead to the experience of the anger itself, it's like we've taken our foot off the gas pedal and put the car into neutral. The car is not going to stop immediately, but we may be able to have the skill to kind of steer the car as it comes to a stop. It will come to a stop when we're no longer fueling it. And likewise, the states, these emotional reactive states, have a life, and it's actually shorter than you think, often, when you stop fueling the fire. We can come to a state of kind of rest, like the car comes to rest, way more quickly than we would think. And yet, initially, as we start this exploration, what often happens is we get a few moments of, okay, this is what it's like. This is how it feels in the body. And, oh, but they shouldn't have done that thing. And, okay, then we put our foot on the gas pedal again and we think about taking it off. So we just get to explore that, experience what's happening there. So as we do this, as I said earlier, we learn a lot about how anger functions in our own minds. We gain some compassion for ourselves and for others about kind of the conditioned nature of this. As I saw this in my own experience, I began to realize, this has been practiced a lot in my life. And I had examples of how to practice it. It was in my culture, essentially. And so the arising of it in my own experience was conditioned. So to see that conditioning, and then also to begin to see that the bringing of mindfulness to this experience as we explore this middle way, neither repressing nor expressing, that creates different conditions around the aversive experience that, as I said a little bit ago, kind of lets our system kind of begins to navigate what it might mean to drop that coal, how to drop that hot coal. our organism kind of wants to move in the direction of well-being. It wants to have ease and wants to be happy. And the mindfulness gives our system a different set of information than we have been working with before. We've been working before with information around, well, here's how I get happy. I get rid of this thing. I make sure that person never does that thing to me again. And that's what we've learned. And so this exploration begins to find different ways to come to that well-being through this the different information around what is happening in the present moment. Previously, before we really met this practice, we were not really aware of what was happening around these difficult states of mind in the present moment. And so we see that, and our system gets a new education, and the mechanism that wants to move towards well-being has new information to work with and begins to navigate things in a different way. Now, this doesn't mean this navigating things in a different way. We might think what this means. I mean, this encouragement to neither express nor repress anger, on the surface of it sounds like I don't take any action when I'm angry. And yet there are times when we need to take action, when harm is being caused, when suffering is happening, when we are in danger, when loved ones are in danger, we may need to take action. So this exploration is not just an exploration of the internal experience. There are times when we might actually even have to take action before we really have a chance to not act out of anger, you know, but at the same time, you know, what I often see is when we are in a situation where there is kind of a situation where maybe somebody is doing harm to us or to our loved ones, part of the motivation for acting in that situation might well be anger. But if we can look a little more deeply, we also see that part of the motivation for acting in that situation is out of love and compassion and care for our loved ones, and actually maybe even at times care that the person who's perpetuating the suffering, you know, what damage that's doing to them to continue taking that action. And so that we might be able to explore when we do need to take an action, to connect with that wish for non-suffering, non-harming, connect with that deep, the kind of inner ethical wish for all beings to be happy and safe and healthy. And sometimes that requires action. Sometimes it asks for action. If you are like walking down a street and you know with a little child, and the child, you know, sees something shiny in the middle of the road and wants to run out into the street to look at it, and you know there's a car coming, you are not going to just say, oh, fear, fear, fear is arising. You know, you're going to try to stop that child, pull that child back out of compassion and care, probably also some out of the fear. The fear is actually extra. It's not necessary. And yet it's going to be there. But maybe we can also see that those actions are motivated too, out of compassion, out of care, out of love, and commit ourselves to looking at the extra part, which is this kind of constriction of heart. When we're experiencing anger and fear and aversion, the heart is not open. It's tight. It's brittle. It's more reactive than responsive. And we can be in the world with very similar, with situations that are challenging, and yet with an open heart that kind of feels or reverberates with the struggles and suffering of the world and responds rather than reacts. And yet the way to that responsiveness is to take some time to look at this closed heart. And so in a way, we have to have an open heart about this closed heart. We have to explore, can I be open-hearted about my own anger and aversion and be curious about it? And the practice, the system will do its work to help us to let it go. So there's just a couple of minutes. Just see if there's any, just really only a couple, but is there any comment or question or reflection that anybody wants to share? Yeah.
My question is about how to know the difference between repressing your anger and just noticing it quickly and saying, not now.
So it was kind of that movement where I said, you can take a walk with me. It's like I wasn't trying to put the anger, I wasn't trying to not feel the anger. I was just not going to pay attention to it. Kind of like you might just say to a child, yeah, you can stay in the room with me, but right now I need to work, and so not now. But to not tell them, go sit in the corner, or it's not got that kind of energy to it. It's almost more of an energetic experience of oh, can't feel that, don't want to feel that, versus yeah, that's there and I'm going to put my attention someplace else right now. So it's a feeling of and, of allowing it to be there, but not giving it any attention in that case. Yeah. And that as the mindfulness gets stronger, we can allow it to be there and observe it. We can be with the body sensations. We might know the thoughts that are coming with it. And so that is more the feeling of holding the state. And that's kind of more the place where we're really more clear that neither repressing nor expressing. It's just it's here. I'm holding you. I'm with you. Kind of that feeling. And yet there are times when it's too strong, and so we do have to kind of put it aside. Yeah. Thank you. And it's 9:00, so thank you for your attention. And in a couple of weeks, I'll explore the other side of the equation. Thank you.